Good afternoon. This is the Subcommittee on Transportation Economic Development of the Joint Ways and Means. This afternoon, we're continuing on with public hearing Senate Bill 5510, Economic and Community Development Department. Robin Lamont represents us from the Legislative Fiscal Office, and Suki Huerta is the Subcommittee Assistant. And we're going to go ahead in the Community Development Fund this afternoon, and we'll hear from Director Scott to start off. There's an overview.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bill Scott. I'm the Director of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. Today, what we're going to do is stay with the Community Development Fund, but return to the community finance portion of it and try to complete our presentation of the infrastructure funds and the major lottery bond request that's included in the governor's recommended budget. If we get through that, I can finish up the few things we didn't get to yesterday in the rest of the community development fund, and that'll essentially complete our presentation, or otherwise I'll finish that up tomorrow. We will deliver sometime during the hearing the answers to all the questions except the ones that were asked yesterday, and I think maybe the ones from the Progress Board and Tourism Commission from Friday, and we'll have all those answers tomorrow.
Representative Johnson's recognized.
And Mr. Chair, I'll have all my questions ready for the agency, so I'm delighted to know you've got a clean slate.
Okay. So I think we're ready to wrap up as pretty promptly here. The
can I double check? Are we on page 14 of the?
I'll come to that in just a minute. I have it right in front of me. First of all, let me just make it clear where we are in the book, and then I'll get to the presentation handout that we had before. The first red tab is the overview of the Community Development Fund, and we're really behind the second tab, which is Community Development Finance. But if you stay with the first tab and go to the last page behind the first tab, the investments we're talking about today is essentially everything over in the far right column except for Brownfield Redevelopment Loan Fund, but it's the $198 million worth of lottery bond investments is essentially what the subject of today's presentation is. The description of the programs that's in the book is behind the next tab on Community Development Finance. And the program option package is at page 10 behind that second tab. Later, I will be at the end of going over that. I will go back to the last pages behind the program services green tab and also present the staffing program option packages that are associated with the infrastructure package. So that's where we are in the book. The handout we have is the one that we've used a couple of days before that Mike Burton and I were working on. It's this one that's headed Community Development Finance, Community Assistance Program Overview. We do have extra copies for anybody who doesn't have it or for Representative Berger. Okay, that's fine. Same one.
Thank you.
Now, Robin, you're suggesting we're on page 14. Mike Burton, who was presenting this for, thought he'd made it to page 20, but let me start. Maybe I'll start at page 14 just so we can make sure we're all in the same group. I just wanted to.
He was on 13, and I'm looking. Mine goes 13 and 15. I don't have a 14.
I'm going to get the chairman a copy that has page 14 in it.
No wonder I lost the Richard wasn't on.
There were a couple of questions I thought I might address that have come up previously that we haven't, I think, had a full opportunity to be sure that we were understood or had answered your questions as well as we could. And let me just briefly hit those first, because a couple of you were raising it. First of all, we had shown you both the blue covered book, the 2001 Needs and Issues Inventory, and this is, I think everybody's clear now on what this is, a list of things that communities have said are their priorities, and they have characterized as needs, and obviously we could characterize them as needs or wants or whatever, but that's, and this is something the department administers, but and collects and encourages communities to make what they're asking for visible for everybody else and for all the funders, but we don't edit this document. We essentially just compile it in a format so everything's comparable. If you're interested, and so picking projects out of here as representative of what the department might fund won't necessarily really be something that we would fund or would even have the authority or the resources or anything like that to fund. The Green Book, which is titled Awards by County 1997 through 2000, is not just for community finance, but for business finance and everything else we do. This is all the money we have loaned or granted to anyone during that period, and anything that is in here is something that we have actually done. So if you want to get a representative idea of where the money actually goes, the Green Book does that.
Ms. Johnson is recognized.
One of the questions that I'd like you to help us with, Mr. Scott, because a couple of us have wrestled with it. In the Green Book, there is quite a recitation of very small grants, $60 to a flower shop. And I don't remember specifically whether it was to a flower shop, but these are minuscule grants. Which one of your lines of business takes you into making those little tiny grants?
Or are they loans?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, the everything in here is listed by program, so it can give you that information. The page I opened to...
It never occurred to me there were loans.
The page I opened to is page 74. It has a $455 grant to the, or it doesn't, I can't tell by reading this whether there's a grant or...
You wouldn't mind, could you go to
sure.
page 7, which
sure.
is an area I'm very familiar
okay.
with. This happens to be Clatsop County. A $24 either grant or loan to sign here, a $60 to Harbor Street Flowers, $75 to the Midtown Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like my Visa card.
Yeah.
No.
Did you pay my Visa
well,
card?
I don't see any bars on here.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, this is the Capital Access Program. The Capital Access Program has as its most active partner the Bank of Astoria. And what this program does is the program is actually administered by the bank, and the department agrees to match each loan that's made that's called a capital access loan. A certain percentage, like 1%, is deposited in a risk pool that is that then it essentially operates as insurance, and the Bank of Astoria can draw against that pool for any loan it makes into the program.
So 1% of a $24 loan?
1% of the loan goes in there, and then we provide money, the same amount of money as that 1%, or maybe it's 1.5%, I'm not perfectly sure, but it's something like that. And so that all goes into a risk pool so that the Bank of Astoria makes a lot of these loans. They have that pool, and they can recover. If they have a default, they can recover from the pool in addition to going after the company. And so it's essentially an insurance vehicle for those loans. In a distressed area, we can double the match. We can provide double match. So that's what these are. These are very small loans. Some different banks use them differently. The Bank of Astoria has been very aggressive in making what you might call microloans with that program.
Are those federally mandated kinds of programs, or it almost sounds like a small business investment corporation kind of arrangement that they used to have a bank name for? And anyway, are those federally directed programs, or is this something that the state that we do statutorily to provide these kinds of loans?
Mr. Chairman, this is a state program. There's no federal element to it. Oregon is one of the few states that pioneered this type of program about 10 years ago.
Is it statutory, or is it just by rule?
No. Mr. Chairman, no, it's spelled out in some detail in the statute.
And then finally, relative to the co-partnership arrangement, I think you explained some of that yesterday, or it was explained to us in part yesterday, relative to that co-partnering, do we have an accounting of those banks or area investment operations that have the resources on hand and they manage the loan portfolio?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Mark Houston, who was here yesterday and he can certainly come back tomorrow if you'd like him, would have a complete record of basically the banks. We don't review the credits or the individual loans, but they notify us every time they make a loan. They send us, I assume, electronically information that allows us to keep a file on the loan as they do. Okay. And they also report on the payment history and their use of the risk pool funds.
I think Mr. Houston was going to give us an analysis of the loans with some aging and default information
right.
as well. Okay. Right. Representative Ringel is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to run this through one more time, a little bit slower for me. For example, on page 7, the sign here, the $24, that represents a $24 loan from the Bank of Astoria to that company?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ringo, that's the way I understand this report, yes.
Okay, so when it says amount awarded, it's so the money isn't coming from the state, it's coming from the Bank of Astoria, but the state...
Oh, good question. Mr. Chairman, Representative Ringo, I bet what this is that the $24 is the contribution we make. I could be wrong about this. We'll get you an answer. That could be, might be the contribution we make to the loan reserve rather than the amount of the loan itself.
And the contribution you make is 1%.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ringo, it's something like that. It's somewhere between 1% and 2%. The maybe one other comment I could make about this particular program is that it hasn't received any new appropriations from the legislature in a number of years. Essentially, we make money on the Oregon Business Development Fund, which is another revolving loan program, and we asked for and got authority from the legislature to use profits from the Oregon Business Development Fund to fund this program as it needs additional cash, which it doesn't consume much cash, but that's where the cash comes from.
Representative Smith is recognized.
Thank you, Chair Butler. Is there an opportunity to streamline this process and let our community development corporations administer this program and use it as a complementary tool with their other GAP financing instruments?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, I'm not sure. There's very little administration involved in the program. So I'm not sure this program would lend itself to that. We've tried to move that direction with some of our other business finance vehicles, but we'd certainly be willing to explore if there might be any such opportunity.
Just one question in that regard. You indicated there's not a great deal of administration, just the pure entry of this kind of information, even if you didn't have to keep track of it, which Mr. Houston must do, or the bank just reports, I guess, to him, but there would be some administration in that process.
Mr. Chairman, obviously, I guess I'd say the I guess I'd say the incremental cost for each loan that's made under the program is virtually zero. The costs involved are in maintaining the and monitoring the relationship with each bank and in introducing, you know, new banks that want to join the program and helping them get set up in the program, and that kind of thing is where the administrative costs really are.
Smith?
Excellent.
Thank you. Representative Engel?
Thank you. So this money goes into, let's say the state's contribution is 1%. It goes into a revolving fund to pay for any defaults on the loans. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ringo, it's not really a revolving fund. It's really would be an account at the bank. In this case, it would be the Bank of Astoria, I'm sure. And the bank simply holds those funds. Those funds are an asset of the Bank of Astoria. They have a contractual obligation to us to use those assets in a certain way, which is to recover their losses from loans made under this program.
And for this guarantee, these loans are at a lower interest rate than they would be?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ringo, I think the more accurate would be that the banks will make loans they wouldn't otherwise make because they have a place to a better security. So it's companies that are, it's kind of the almost bankable company.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Smith.
I just want to make sure I understand. This, though, if Bank of Astoria is making these deposits, then that's their cash in that account.
Chairman, Representative Smith, I believe that's true.
Well, now you got me confused. I thought this was state money.
We forfeit it when it's deposited. Is that what we do when it becomes insurance deposit?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ringo, let me try to answer both questions. Let's say that the Bank of Astoria has made $500,000 worth of loans in this program. On each one of those loans, they essentially deposited, so they used $500,000 of their money. 1% of that, which would be $5,000, essentially got deposited in an account at the Bank of Astoria that they can use to recover against those loans. Another $5,000 was contributed by us to match it, so there'd be $10,000 sitting in this account. So the Bank of Astoria has two assets, or a collection of loans worth $500,000, and an account worth $10,000. If one of those loans in their $500,000 portfolio defaults and they can't collect from the borrower, they can go to the $10,000 account and take money out of there and put it back into their general assets of the bank.
Who puts in both halves? The bank put in one.
Well, one half comes from the bank, but essentially the borrower has to repay it.
I see.
And the other half comes from us as a subsidy to that account.
I have a comment about the book in general. I think the department's missing an opportunity to paint the whole picture. Because when you look at this, it only shows the amount awarded and jobs retained, but it doesn't show additional leverage. And I know there's projects that your department has made where you made a $50,000 investment and it's turned into $3 or $4 million. Just as a commentary for the future, I'd like to be able to see additional dollars leveraged so we can see what the state's contribution was and what additional dollars were put into projects as well, or what has resulted as a result of that investment.
Chairman, Representative Smith, thank you for the advice. The same software that produced this report could have produced one that had the leverage and that had columns of leverage as well. Anyway, my point was really to make sure the committee was focused that these are the funds that we've actually done as opposed to what people have said they wanted.
Representative Johnson is recognized.
Thank you. Because then of the relationship with the banks, that would explain why there were fraternal organizations in here, and I think Senator Yee and I were going through one of your documents. Oh, it was the issues and inventory. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I'm changing subjects, but with the chair's permission, I'd like to ask the question.
The question now is related to the
issues
2001 organ needs and issues inventory.
How it is that there are fraternal organizations and private enterprise in those needs, in that needs assessment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, if I had an example, that might help me.
Let's pass on that. I won't take the committee's time, and I'll include it in
okay.
my question.
Okay.
Thank you.
I have an example.
How fortuitous.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, in Lynn County, page 55.
Is it in the green book?
In the blue book, I believe.
No, I
believe
it's green. Senator, you brought this up before about the St. Francis Hotel.
Yes.
Yes. Is this in the blue book or the green book?
That's in the list of needs.
This in the blue book.
He's looking at the green book.
Yes. Probably in the list of needs, too.
Well,
yeah, I think
it would have been in Albany. With
yes.
Lynn County in Albany.
I must have taken
right.
it to my office. I don't know where it was
Thank
exactly.
You.
But Lynn County is in alphabetical order.
Page 117 is for Lynn County again.
The sign's wrong. Yes. Thank you.
I think the St. Francis Hotel was
yes.
under
Saint,
the city of Albany.
Yes, St. Francis Hotel is a private hotel. So why are we loaning, is this a loan or a grant of $230,000 to help them renovate the hotel in downtown Albany?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, we aren't. This simply represents something that the city of Albany has suggested is a project it would like to do. And I think that Steve Bryant answered that question in detail in writing that we provided you last week. My recollection is that the city is interested either itself or through a community development corporation or something in acquiring and rehabilitating the hotel for low-income housing.
I'm not satisfied with the answer. I know he sent me a list of explanations. I don't understand why do they want to renovate a private hotel for low-income renters. I don't know if the city agrees that a low-income residential unit would be beneficial in a downtown Albany area. I wonder if they have asked for input from local businesses.
Director Scott, are these typically, when it says the city of Albany, would that be submitted by the city itself as a request relative to the community facilities and infrastructure and those kinds of things, those that were done by the council and government or the county itself? Would those be typically submitted by the agency themselves?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think we know for sure, and they may not know who the ultimate applicants for funds might be. I think this is a need that the city of Albany has identified as being a need in their community, and that's not that kind of a renovation for low-income housing is not something our department has any resources that we could help with. It might be possible that the Department of Housing and Community Services could help with that.
But certainly under this particular scenario, they could submit that under what they determine could be a city need or a county need, and they would say, we think it's a need. If you've got a bunch of extra funds, remember us. I think I classified this as a kind of a Christmas wish list in some respects, that maybe these were things that people would like to have if the money was available.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Yee is recognized.
I invited the county commissioners for their input, and they say out of this $300 million list, they can see maybe $1 million is really worth assisting. They call this a dream list. So I wonder if they have asked for local counties' input before such a list is submitted. They feel a lot of them are transportation needs, and county is very healthy with their county road funds, and they feel they can take care of them themselves.
Mr. Chair, so in comment, I think, to what Representative Johnson's original question was about the fraternal organizations and the private, this, to me, what Senator Yee has said is this is kind of like the Spiegel catalog or whatever. It's a list of people's needs and wants, but not necessarily are they ever going to, and I just wonder if when we put them together in a booklet like this, and if there's a lot of expense involved here,
mm-hmm.
if they're not ever going to go anywhere, or they're going to be not something the department looks at seriously at funding, is it just something we need to do as a state government to have a needs and wants list everywhere? I don't know.
I think part of the explanation, Senator, was that it needed to be in that list format in order to be considered by any number of agencies for the potential of funding, as I recall some of the testimony. But it had to show up. It's like on the STIP program that we see relative to transportation. It gets in line at some point, and then if it qualifies for a certain level, then
it seems like this is a list of things that I think we said will never get in line, and yet it's in there.
Yeah,
I mean, it hasn't even gone through the county commissioner's review.
And that very well may be. I don't know what the procedure is. Director Scott, did you?
Mr. Chairman, the point of developing this list has really been to address another question that Representative Johnson has repeatedly raised, which is the challenge that communities have in trying to find where resources are that might meet their needs. And one of the things that I think all the state and local participants agree is useful in solving that problem of having it be a maze and of reducing the advantage of the people who have expensive city managers and so on, and increasing the access of the people who don't, is to create a list on which everybody can essentially identify whatever they regard as a need or a want, or however you want to characterize it. And for instance, in the case of the City of Albany project, this is a way of bringing it to the attention of the county commissioners, the regional investment board, anybody else, you know, that this is something the City of Albany may be asking for, so they can get ready to, you know, with their answer, or they realize that other people might be being asked for the same thing, and the funders might want to get together and talk and to try to ultimately, by sharing information, make the whole system more efficient, as opposed to have many, many silos that don't talk to each other and are invisible to each other, that have people pursuing money for projects going through them. So that's the rationale for having a list that we don't censor. In fact, the in response to Senator Yee's question and comment, we encourage as much prioritization at the highest level that people are willing to do it. In some counties in the state, the county commissioners have reviewed these lists, and they've produced, I think you would find in Jackson and Josephine County, they actually have a two-county list. They're in priority order that's agreed to by the both counties as to the top, you know, one through whatever in both Jackson and Josephine County. They can also give it separately to you. They can give you by Jackson, they can give it by Josephine, they can give it for each city. That's the most highly developed list we have in the state. Other places, the relationships are not such that the cities are willing to submit to that kind of review by the counties. So that's, it varies by place.
Representative Johnson's recognized.
First, a comment. I want to correct Mr. Scott on the record. I said experienced city managers, not expensive city managers.
I stand corrected.
Thank you. One observation about the list, though, Mr. Scott, actually two observations. One of them is, I think people at the local level, when you put things down in writing, have a tendency to build expectations around it. And that's one of the reasons that I thought this list is a little bit dangerous. Secondly, it's my observation that the folks who have the money can incentivize the folks who want the money to do all sorts of different presentations. I would assume, and I'm not advocating that this is a good outcome, but I'm making the assumption that if you told counties that once the list was produced at the local level in a kind of free-for-all expression of what everybody wanted, and then there were further refinements, you could ask folks, I think, to refine that list any way you wanted it, could you not? I mean, you're incentivizing it with grants.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, I've personally been beaten up in probably 25 meetings on that specific subject. This is back in about 96 and 97, so it's been a while. This is kind of a revisitation. The Oregon League of Cities was adamant that we not institute that kind of a procedure, and I think we have agreed in consultation in many meetings that have been mainly done through what is called the state CERT, the State Economic Revitalization Team, along with the Oregon Rural Development Council, where we had all the state and federal people that fund these kind of projects and many, many community representatives have been trying to evolve a system that will work as well as it can for everybody. What you're seeing is the state of the art in that development. This is where we are, and there's been a lot of pushing back and forth between things that would make it more efficient for the state or the federal funders, like what you've just been suggesting, and things that are more comfortable given the dynamics of local processes. And we have found in the past that sometimes when we set up those kind of things where we do have the power to dictate, that may produce a short-term result that we want, but it doesn't necessarily build good, solid strategic relationships at the local level where they need to be. So that's the best answer I can give.
Johnson's follow-up?
A good strategic relationship, though, Director Scott, in my observation, lasts as long as the next election. I mean, I don't know what kind of relationships you're trying to forge, relationships between county commissioners who will come and go, relationships between business and local government, relations. I don't know what relationships are you trying to form that would be damaged if there was a little more rigor in the refinement of that list.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I think my best judgment as having been in this business for quite a while is that the communities that succeed in economic and community development are ones that have strong leadership and the ability to thrash things out locally and achieve consensus. My observation would be that while what you say is certainly true in terms of the individuals involved come and go, that communities do develop a culture of constructive or otherwise leadership that does outlive the terms of individual people. And we try partly through, that's why we are involved in the leadership training and the strategic planning assistance and some of those things in trying to encourage constructive, enduring local leadership cultures that enable a community to undertake the persistent efforts that pay off in the long run.
I don't disagree with you. I mean, I'm thinking of like Clatsop County Economic Development. That organization seems to survive regardless of the vagaries of the county commission or who happens to be the chair of CCEDC. And so I know that costs a quarter. And so I agree with you in that respect.
Thank you very much. We also recognize Representative Verger at the dais today, and if you have any questions, Representative Verger, feel free to thank you. Okay, Director Scott, please.
Okay, let's go back. Page 14. This just lists the programs that we would categorize in the presentations that we're making here as being ones that are in the community development finance area. We've already covered the community assistance programs, the rural development initiatives in Oregon downtown. The next page just reviews the kind of volume and scale of the both the technical assistance and the design and construction funding that we've done in both infrastructure and community facilities. Page 16, we've already is really the material we've already covered with relation to the community assistance, and pages 17 just gives you a little breakdown of what kind of community facilities we were involved in. The only and the number of those projects. The only comment I'd make there is that the housing segment will pretty much be gone now that we are have transferred the community development block grant dollars for that to the Department of Housing and Community Services.
Can I just ask one question on page 15, Director Scott, relative to technical assistance funding, 76 projects totaling $1,717,000 for the current biennium, and funded for design and construction funding, 150 projects. Again, this is 18-month data. $165.3 million. Relative to those community development finance opportunities for technical assistance and design and construction, do we know how many total of the 76 projects? Is that what's the universe of the population there? Now, the 156 projects totaling 165 million, do we know what the university projects are there? And finally, do we know how many employees are involved in each of these two different endeavors?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure what you mean by the universe.
How many of 76 funded projects under the technical assistance fund, how many made application? The same is true with regard to the funded projects under design and construction funding.
Essentially, the way our programs work, we don't really accept applications for projects that we aren't prepared to fund. What we do is we try to manage the pipeline of projects and people's expectations so that
can,
at the
can I interrupt right there?
Yeah,
I apologize, Chair Butler.
Please, Representative Smith.
I have one question. I've died to ask this question for 10 years. How come when we know the department's going to fund a project, they don't come in and help with the application and doing it, rather than sending the application to the community and saying, you folks put it together? Because you folks know exactly what you want in that application. You know exactly what the expectations are to get the project funded. Wouldn't it make more sense for the department to step in with its own staff member and hold the hand of that community? And granted, I'm speaking from a rural perspective in helping them put that application together.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, the answer is yes. Basically, I would say we're doing more of that. We also, in response to a similar question you asked last week, I think we've already answered that we are in the process of seeking to contract with organizations such as economic development districts or potentially counties or councils of government to provide some of that service for communities.
Follow-up statement. As a freshman, I feel frustrated that I don't have the input in on the budget, but this is one area where I see a tremendous need, and I think now that we have that understanding, I'd like to try and work with you and your staff over the next couple of days to really try and bring resolution to this, even if it's in the form of a note.
I guess I was surprised that 150 projects were funded, and that's the total universe. That was, in other words, they're not funded unless there's no application unless funding is in the pipeline, and so the application is really the when you get your copy of the application, the blank application,
that's your basically your grant form in effect. All you got to do is just fill out the 60 or 80 pages at that point. So, if I understand what you're saying, the 76 projects is the total universe of projects on the technical assistance funding, and 150 projects for the 18 months of the design and construction funding are all the applications that are out. Basically, that you ran a total of 150 applications. There weren't any applications that were turned down.
Mr. Chairman, the way we do business currently is when we become aware that somebody is really seriously planning to apply for us for money, we often go through a one-stop meeting like the one we talked about, or we get in conversation with them. At the point where we think it's likely to become an application, we put it in our log as what we call a concept. And so we start tracking the project, and we say we know the city of Ione is going to come to us for a expansion of their sewer treatment plant or something or other. And
that's where Representative Smith, I think, is coming from, is that at that point is where he would like to have the assistance to the city of Ione. Is that your point?
Exactly, because you've got these communities that, my goodness, are 300 people, and the city council's a volunteer, and most of them they don't have the level of sophistication to put an application together, especially when they're having to meet specific requirements. And gosh, your department knows what those requirements are. There's got to be a way to have them step in and help put those together, especially when you're going to fund them. Those that you're not, let's just be upfront and say it's not on our radar screen at this point in time. Those that we do know we're going to fund, we ought to be stepping up and helping them put those applications together.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, we agree with that, and we'll be happy to meet with Representative Smith and share with him what our current plans are and see what his ideas for improving on it are. But going back, Mr. Chair, to your point. Essentially, we log it in as a concept. At that point, we're working with the community on it. And at some point, if we think the project is something we aren't going to be able to fund, or that they need to be talking to a different agency or something like that, we essentially say, don't apply to us for funds. So we don't, essentially what we're trying to do is not have them waste time doing work in preparing an application for a project that we're then going to say no to. We're trying to just give us as much information as we need to give them the feedback that they need at a given point in time, rather than, because we, one of the things when we really critiqued all our programs back 4 or 5 years ago was that we believed we were spending an enormous amount of our time and an enormous amount of local government's time, some of it being city clerks who, we're only going to see one of these in their lifetimes, on stuff that wasn't going to come to anything. And what we've tried to do is move to a system where everybody's time is spent on things that will get them to the next stage, and we don't encourage them to do work that won't result in a productive answer for them.
And then the number of staff that are involved in these technical assistance funding and the design and construction funding, and that may be instructive now with regard to the request that Representative Smith is making, and that is, could some of those staff be diverted to assist locally? So you know right offhand, and maybe that's a question for someone else.
Mr. Chairman, there are essentially the main actors in this are the regional development officers who maybe do the early stage intake and discussions on some of these. Then once it becomes, a real concept we're working with, then that would go to one of the regional coordinators or project managers on our regional team. And then at various points, our finance team might be called on for technical advice or eventually for packaging the program. At some point, we might have the people that do that, the kind of assistance that you and Representative Smith are talking about are really the regional coordinators. I know Judge White talked about the regional development officers helping him fill out applications, and I'm sure they do that occasionally, but by and large, that's not they normally wouldn't go into that much depth. The regional coordinators do that, but as I said, and as Representative Smith said, some of these projects are, and some of these communities are, require so much of that kind of assistance that we think there's perhaps a more efficient way to provide some of that assistance through people that are a little closer to the ground and closer to the community.
Well, maybe to modify my request, maybe the department ought to have a qualified list of consultants or people who are trained in putting these applications together that they could reference them to, so they at least know who they should be contacting to find out how to put these applications together. Because in rural eastern Oregon, there's a good handful of folks who know how to put these together. But if you're in the city of Ione and a person resides in Fossil, maybe that connection's not being made, and there's a way to help them with that process. And we've got communities throughout this entire state of Oregon that literally need their hands held. That's just the reality. So.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Senator Yee?
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Scott, do you have a criteria for funding for these programs? Is it to create jobs, or is it to create better relationships with communities? What's the criteria for funding?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, those criteria are summarized on page 3 behind your tab on community development finance, the criteria for each program.
And are these grant funds or are these loans? These are form of loans and grant combinations, it says. This is just a combination of loans and grants.
Mr. Chair, each program is just, some of them are strictly revolving loan programs. Some of them can make either loans or grants or provide bonding assistance. If we can go back.
This is the criteria on page 3. I have a follow-up question.
Follow-up. Senator,
when Judge Cooper was here, and I asked him what is the criteria for funding in his region, and he said to me it depends on project readiness, on whether there is leverage for matching funds, and he said how many families are served. I guess job creation is not one of their criteria.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, the criteria are somewhat different in each of our programs, and in the regional investment and rural investment programs, each region is free to establish its own criteria.
They do not have a uniform goal of creating jobs.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also asked for how many jobs are created from the community development fund since 5 years ago, and what is the current status, and what's your goal for the next 2 years? I have requested that a day or two ago, and I expect to see that in writing.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, the information requested will be supplied today in the written answers to those questions. There have not been goals established specifically for those performance measures in the past, but our commission is embarked on the project of establishing targets for each of our performance measures for the 2001-2003 biennium, and they'll have that done by August.
And
follow up.
Although this requirement is in statute, saying that every program needs to report its job creation for every biennium, so it's required by statute. So that information really should be given to us.
Chair, Senator Yee, we have given you that information. It's in the biennial report, and it will be in the written answers to your questions today.
But it's not there.
Please go ahead and proceed, Director Stack.
Back to page 18. These were just some of the performance measures that specifically related to these programs. This one is the one that we have some concern about, because this is the issue of project completion. And originally, this performance measure was designed in order to see, are we really making headway on the problem of, you know, getting people their water and sewer systems. As it turns out, after analyzing these statistics, which show a rather dramatic drop in completions, the reason is not that less projects have been completed. The problem is that we're not getting the paperwork done on the closeouts of the projects because the workload has increased.
Representative Johnson's?
This is something that Mr. Scott and I have discussed again, and it's getting the paperwork on any project. Who's not producing the paperwork in this instance? When you say you're not getting the paperwork, tell me where the breakdown is.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the responsible people within our department for this are the regional coordinators. They typically, that involves a good deal of interaction with whoever is representing the awardee, and so the documentation of a variety of things that are required by our contract with them needs to be added to the file.
A couple of follow-ups, Mr. Chair.
Certainly, Representative Johnson.
What's the time lag then? How long a backlog is there? 2 months, 8 months, 10 years? What?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I'm not sure I've got a clear handle on that. We believe we're catching up at the moment, that we're closing the gap, but I'm not sure how long it'll take us at our current staffing level to get there.
Well, here's one of my questions, Mr. Chair, and I have asked for it in the written questions that I'm going to disseminate at the end of this meeting. But it is the question of the paperwork tracking on any project. Right now, Oregon Economic and Community Development is either totally responsible for these projects or has local partnerships that play a role in bringing these together. And I've been quite concerned based on an instance that we had up in Columbia County, and I'm still asking the department for some additional details on this. Where does the entire file reside? And who ultimately is responsible for getting all the paperwork in place? And finally, 5 years from now or 6 years from now, when we're all gone, where is the totality of the file? And you've just now demonstrated that with paperwork missing and your regional coordinator's responsible for bringing this stuff in, and there's a certain time lag, if something happens to those regional coordinators, it seems to me that the paperwork is the only lasting record of some of these transactions. And if there's not a rigorous demand to have your regional coordinators produce that paperwork, and not an institutional commitment at the agency to be the repository for that paperwork, at the end of a multi-million dollar project or a multi-million dollar recruitment, I don't know where the file is. So if I needed to go back in a court hearing or some kind of process 5 years after the plant's built, where is the whole file?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the file for any award the department makes resides in our office in Salem and is the responsibility of the regional coordinator. So that's the answer. If you speak of a recruitment, there may be several different projects involved, some of which are ours, some of which are somebody else's. There isn't necessarily a single repository for all those project files.
In the absence of the chair, I'll take the liberty of following up. From a public policy point of view, is that not worrisome? And I keep going back like a broken record to the United States Gypsum recruitment, where there was a multi-million dollar incentive package offered, and bits and pieces of that file appear to be scattered everywhere. Redco has a piece, the county has a piece, the port has a piece, the city has a piece, OEDD has a piece. And so when everything's said and done, if there was some default or some problem or some requirement to go to the file, I don't know where the file exists. And I'm asking, is it not the responsibility of the state's economic development agency that is frequently the lead on these huge projects to be the repository for the paperwork that is the state's only record of how a huge project or a recruitment came to be?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I've offered before, and we intend to review the case you're referring to as well as any others that seem relevant to see if we think there's any additional role we ought to be playing in maybe providing some kind of guidance to local agencies in their own accountability. However, I think that inevitably in the kind of project you're describing, there are several accountable parties, each of which is in the end responsible for its own funds that it has invested or its own commitments that it's made. And we don't believe we have authority or necessarily a responsibility to oversee the commitments that are made by the local governments, per se.
That might be something that you and I will respectfully disagree on when the state becomes the lead agency in doing the recruitment. And I know I'm switching back and forth between recruitments of big out-of-state companies and completed water and sewer facilities, but I'm trying to make the same point on the requirement for paperwork, where there are millions of dollars in play, whether it's building a water system for a local community or whether it's successfully recruiting and building a facility that is coming from out-of-state. That paperwork is the state's only history on what happened. And if there's some issue later that pulls the state or some subset of the state's recruitment into court, finding that paperwork scattered all over the place seems to me to put the state in jeopardy. And it may be that that's something that would need to be addressed by statute at a later time, but it's highly worrisome to me that when in the aftermath of USG, I've gone back and asked for the file, and the file essentially consists of the working file of the regional development officer, and that's it. And I cannot track what happened to $419,000 of public money. And it ends up in the absence of a complete file with everybody going like this. And there is no answer. And it's my view that as the lead development agency for the state responsible for handling the lion's share of the money in these projects, that there ought to be a requirement that the state becomes the repository for the files, even if it's no more than asking local jurisdictions and your local partners to make copies of their files and send them to you while still retaining the originals themselves. Somewhere there ought to be the complete transaction.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we do have complete files on all the awards or investments that the state made in the USG project. We don't have copies of the files of the Port of St. Helens. I don't think we have the authority to ask for them.
Respectfully, Mr. Scott, at the point that there's $419,000 of public money that somehow between the port and OEDD ended up going missing, I would submit to you that there's a requirement that somewhere there be a complete file.
I'm unfamiliar with the USG instant matter, but I think that perhaps that's something that could be brought up in a private work group with the department, and maybe we could seek some solutions if we can't find answers so that it doesn't happen at a later time. As you say, maybe just gathering the information as you go along in one central repository, being the state OECD, that would be.
Thank you, and I apologize to the committee for dragging this down to a local issue that I happen to be very familiar with. The point that I'm trying to make is that whether it's on completed sewer and water facilities or whether it's on huge multi-million dollar investment packages to bring an out-of-state company. The absence of the paperwork, I think, is inexcusable. And I think that there needs to be some agency response for why it is that the regional coordinators are not dealing with the paperwork sufficient to know whether these projects are closed out.
And the lead agency in this instance case was the OECD?
In the case of United States Gypsum in Rainier, certainly the department played a pivotal role. In these completed sewer and water facilities, I think they play the sole role. Is that not correct, Mr. Scott? I don't want to say anything that's incorrect here. These are your projects, your agency projects, are they not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, yes, although you know some of these certainly involve multi, I mean, they're, many of these projects, there will be other state or federal agencies that also are making grants or loans to the same project. They, and certainly in every one of them, there is at least one local government entity that is making their own investments in the project.
So at the risk of beating this to death, Mr. Chair, then does the graph on page 18 include just the paperwork required by your department, or have you, in effect, on these completed sewer and water facilities, become the repository for all the paperwork relative to each sewer or water project?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, all we're talking about is when we talk about a project completed, it means we have closed our file, which would be involved with our grant or loan.
And you consider it done whether or not the local partners have performed or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we can close the file when they have performed to the satisfaction of the contract we have with them. That doesn't necessarily mean that everything is tied up in bow on the project. There may be elements of it that didn't involve our money that are still problems. We would certainly continue to work with those local communities to resolve any loose ends that were there.
I'm going to quit, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just want to say this is more or less the same kind of frustration I face when I ask for documents to verify the sales they reported about what the consultant has done. I mean, information should be right there. I have to ask four times, not receive it, and now I too have not received it. All I ask for is the document the department has to report the sales. One deputy director said it's six sales, and the international trade manager said it's three sales.
And I think they're going to get together with you privately, and I think that they have the paperwork to review with you because they didn't want it to be on the public record, Senator.
Yes, so. But why does it have to take so long? All I want to do is verify the sales they reported. They must have some document in their hands to report those sales. And the fact that it has to take so long, and the fact that it's different information from different department managers makes it very frustrating. I mean, this should be done the first time we ask to verify the information.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Ringo.
Just a thought. I'm hoping we get to the lottery bonding presentation today. I'm kind of... I don't mean to impose on the schedule, but I would like to hear what Mr. Scott has to say.
We should do that because we do have Mr. Jeffrey here. So if we can go ahead and I think we can come back to the items in our folder under the Oregon Community Development Fund, but we probably, let's go ahead and move forward right now to the Oregon Lottery Overview, if that would be okay, and then that way we can take a look at that. Mr. Scott, what page is that?
Mr. Chair, page 25.
All right. Page 25.
A I'm going to try to go through this at the most basic level I'm able to, and if people feel like I'm going too elementary a level, please interject. But it's very confusing for me even sometimes, and for lots of people. But I think we have a pretty good grip on it. Essentially, what we mean when we say lottery bonds are revenue bonds that are issued by the state of Oregon. They are entirely supported by future revenues from the state lottery, and the credit of the state of Oregon is not on the line. So that's essentially what we're talking about with a lottery bond. On page 26, talks about what we mean by kind of what the total amount of lottery bonds that could be issued or the capacity. And essentially, Oregon pioneered the use of these lottery bonds for purposes that I wasn't involved in back in the early 90s, having to do with the West Side Light Rail program in Portland, Washington County. Those bonds and all bonds issued since, with the requirement of the underwriters who represent the financial markets, Oregon has pledged in those bond documents that it will not issue bonds that would use up, that would cause debt service to exceed 25% of the revenue to the state from the lottery. So that's the practical limit. That's not like in the Constitution or laws of the state. That's in the bond documents that are outstanding. So Oregon would be in default on its old bonds if it issued new bonds that at the time of issuance exceeded, their debt service exceeded that level.
Mr. Scott, using this biennium as in, or next biennium as an example, what do we anticipate the lottery revenue to be for 2001-03?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, I don't have the exact number, but it's roughly $500 million.
So it is $500 million. We're talking about $125 million as 25%.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, that's correct.
So our lottery revenue bond is limited to no more than $125 million?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, it's no more than the amount that would cost $125 million to pay the principal and interest charges each biennium.
Follow-up question.
Follow-up.
Mr. Chair, so why do I see in your budget proposal you are proposing $200 million lottery backed bonds, and that doesn't that exceed the $125 million limit here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, the $125 million is a limit on the amount that could be paid in principal and interest each biennium. So typically that would, $125 million would support maybe a total of, I think it's about $800 million of total outstanding lottery bonds. There have been $500 million on this same slide on page 26. $500 million are already outstanding, and according to the calculations based on the current revenue forecast, there's $315 million of additional lottery bonds that could be issued.
Follow-up,
Senator Yee.
You can levy up to $315 million lottery-backed bonds based on 25% of $500 million.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, that's correct.
I would like you to show me the calculation. How do you reach this $350 million? But you don't have to do it now.
I'm just wondering if I need to make sure that I understand as well.
Yes.
If we've got $500 million that will be coming in, and the instruments all indicate that
the maximum is going to be 25%, then 125 million is for debt services.
Right.
The service debt. And presently there's 508.3 million outstanding of lottery-backed debt, and the indication is that you could go to another 315 million for a total of 823.3 million. And what that would be is, are we looking at basically what you're saying then, Director Scott, is that the 125 million being the 25% of the total annual or the total lottery receipts, would the debt service wouldn't exceed the $823 million? Is that correct?
I think the 500 million is a little low. I was using a round figure, but essentially, I think that's correct. That you're talking about the 125 is what drives the 823 number, the 315 number.
Let me just ask this. This was the first question that I had. And let's say that it is 500 million for the purposes of this discussion. That's the biennial amount. It's like 600
million. That's correct. Okay.
I think it's more like 600.
Right. It's closer. Yes. I think closer on a biennial. But if we said this 500 million, that's after Measure 66 and the school funding set aside and the other.
No, those.
Go ahead. Maybe Greg, you can identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, as Mr. Scott had indicated, I think perhaps the best source to be looking at is the State Debt Advisory Commission's latest report, which is the source of identifying what the remaining capacity is, which was referred to earlier as 315 million. And how they arrive at that, you know, and I could give you copies of that particular page in the report, and maybe that would be useful to follow.
I understand this will max out our capacity for the next 10 years.
Mr. Chair, Senator, if the lottery revenues don't increase, you know, beyond what's forecast, you know, which is just short of $600 million per biennium, then there won't be any additional capacity if the $315 million, you know, in remaining capacity that now exists, does get used up until the West Side Light Rail bonds get paid off. And the final payment for them is in 2010. Those were issued at about $96 million. The biennial debt service on that is $20 million. You know, so that'll probably make another $100 million, you know, more or less available.
Short statement. So we are maxed out for the next 9 years.
Mr. Chair, Senator, if the remaining unused capacity of $315 million, you know, is authorized to be used, then that's true.
Okay. Representative Ringo?
Can we just gain some capacity with the drop in interest rates?
Mr. Chair, Representative?
There's a slight, you know, improvement. And that's why you may have heard, and there's sometimes a little confusion about, well, what is the remaining capacity for lottery bonds? Well, it's a function of what the projected lottery revenues, you know, are going to be, and to the extent that they increase or go down, you know, that's going to have a increase or a reduction in the capacity. And the other one is, as you know, interest rates. The lower the interest we pay, the lower the payments, makes a slight increase in the capacity. But not a substantial.
Thank you very much. My question, Greg, did you help me? I was probably distracted. If the 125 million being the 25% is the other 75%, is it just dedicated for Freeboard, or is that what's dedicated to other dedicated funds from the lottery?
One of the unique things about Oregon's lottery bonds is there's a provision in the Oregon Constitution, you know, that requires debt service on lottery bonds be paid first.
Okay.
And our lottery bonds.
Okay. That takes care of it. So that measure, even the 15% that would be going to schooling, is then at risk if the proceeds from the Oregon lottery were to start to be reduced. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, if the available dollars, you know, are just sufficient to pay lottery debt service, then everything behind it will suffer.
How is anything behind it ordered? Is it on a prorated basis or first in, first out? Do you have any feel for that?
The other provisions that are also in the Constitution are the 15%, you know, to the Education Endowment Fund and the Parks and Natural Resources.
So it must be on a prorated basis is what you're telling me.
Mr. Chair, I'm not an attorney. I'm sure that that would be the next source to look to if we were in that situation. I'm just saying that as constitutional mandates, you know, those would probably be the next, you know, purpose for which any remaining revenues were available.
Just so that I understand, the 15% that is presently dedicated to education is part of the $5.2 billion of the governor's current set-aside for K-12, is it not?
No, but that's not.
Mr. Chair, the 15%, which was established, I believe it was in 1994, entirely goes into the Education Endowment Fund.
Oh, it goes into
the principal in that fund is not touchable.
Okay, all right. So it goes into the endowment fund. All right.
Some of the interest earnings, it gets a little complicated, but some of the interest earnings on the Education Endowment Fund are being used to pay for the $150 million in lottery back bonding that was authorized last biennium for K-12. So it does get a bit complicated.
I think this is a lot like the way my wife keeps our checkbook.
Keep in the dark. I asked this question the very first time we met, and I can't remember the answer. Is there prepayment penalties on these bonds?
Representative, like a lot of bond issues, it's not the simplest answer that there is. When we issue these lottery bonds, they're all issued for 15-year terms. Mm-hmm. The municipal market makes you pay a premium, that is a higher rate of interest. If you allow for an early, what's considered in the market, an early prepayment penalty or option, what we do filled in generally, which is, again, routine in the municipal market, is a call date at the 10-year point. And if there are dollars, you know, that are available and the state wants to, you know, retire that responsibility for a lottery bond, there is the possibility of establishing an escrow, you know, getting that escrow funded and invested.
What I'm trying to figure out is if there's an opportunity for the state to refinance or to even consolidate some of its bonds and result in greater savings. We're at a time right now where interest rates are dipping to a low. And I'm just curious if there's bonds out there that are at 8, 9, 10% versus 5%. I'm just making numbers up. I don't know.
Mr. Chair, Representative. I have a register here of all the lottery bonds that the state has issued. The most recently we issued about $40 million, you know, in bonds, and for the tax exempt portion, we paid 4.5%. We issued some taxable bonds for the housing incentive fund because of the way those monies are going to be used, and paid 6.25%. That's the highest, you know, rate that we paid on any of the lottery bonds. But we also, as a part of the program management, we continue to look and monitor what the opportunities might be for refinancing those bonds and if we can realize, you know, an interest rate savings and therefore a debt service savings. And rates haven't come low enough to make that a practical option.
And then just follow up. If I remember correctly, the last time we talked, Oregon, although this sounds like a lot of money, is still a small fish in the bond market. Is that in the bond market ocean, if you would? I guess what I'm trying to get at, is there an opportunity for this for the state to save money on bonding fees and the rest when you're packaging these obligations?
Another thing that's unique, but actually back, Oregon's been very conservative, you know, in the way that they've used debt. And so in that respect, the fact that, you know, the state doesn't have a great deal of outstanding debt is a very positive, you know. As the chair can tell you, that's the other purpose that the Bonded Debt Advisory Commission was established by the legislature a couple of sessions ago. To provide advice to the legislature and the governor, you know, about the proper capacity factors and things like that that can help the state retain a very positive credit reputation out in the public markets.
Just to follow up, Representative.
You know, Senator Yee's asked some really good questions, and it spurred me to ask, what is the true cost of borrowing this money? Not as does it max out our credit card, but based upon having a maxed out credit card, what does that cost to us as a state? And so when we're looking at lottery bonds of $196 million, not only are we paying a rate of interest on that money, but we're also paying, I assume, for fees that are associated with that. And I know that sounds like a silly question, but when we've got programs out there that could use $3 million, I'm curious, is there a way for the state to... I'm just curious what the state's policy is on packaging this debt and how we do we negotiate for fees?
Chair, Representative, when I quote you a 4.5%, you know, rate of interest for this economic development bond that was issued in March, that includes, you know, the fees that were paid to the underwriters, the interest premium, you know, that we paid to insure the bond so they could sell as a AAA quality credit. And so that interest rate, you know, reflects all of the costs in bringing those bonds, you know, to the market.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
What will be the biennial debt service on the $196 million bond package? That's a 15-year bond, right?
Correct. It'll be just short of $40 million for biennium.
Okay. So $40 million times, what do you say?
7.5.
Okay.
Oh, I mean the interest rate, again, we just issued in March at 4.5%.
Yeah, okay.
That includes the underwriting and the insurance.
Correct.
Bond sell at par or with a particular premium?
Mr. Chair, it was a mix based on, you know, the particular maturity that we were looking at.
Thank you. Representative Johnson, recognized.
Thank you. You said that we just issued bonds at 4 and what was the percentage?
4.5%, Representative.
4.5% is, and then does OEDD then subsequently reloan this money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, depending on which program it goes into, the bulk of it is loaned, some of it is granted.
For the follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
For the loans that you're doing, at what rate does the loan go out the door from the agency?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I don't have at the tip of my tongue what those most recent rates are. They tend to be comparable to municipal finance rates that are out there. They'd probably be somewhat higher than the rates we're talking about here.
You'll discover on the list of questions that I hope to have by the adjournment this afternoon. I'm asking you to respond in writing what that spread is and what you do with the money as a result of the spread.
arbitrage in effect.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Good question.
Okay, are there further questions for Mr. Jeffries while he's here? I think we're just about to the end of page 26.
Page 26, Mr. Chair. Maybe if Mr. Jeffries can stay a couple more minutes, the next little piece of my testimony, he might once again be the right one to answer your question. So I'll ask him to hang in here for a minute. The last bullet on page 26 indicates that the governor's recommended budget includes $269 million of new lottery bonds to be issued within that $315 million capacity. The next page, page 27, simply details the $508 million of lottery bonds that are already outstanding, what they were for, and when they were issued. The reason for the package is that are in the governor's recommended budget for lottery bonds largely has to do with the fact that the last two legislatures have chosen to ultimately balance the education budget with lottery bonds for equipment that's purchased by school districts, and a concern that, I guess, two concerns. One, that would, if the legislature did that again, or continued to do that at the same rate, that we would entirely run out of that capacity. And the other, I guess, which is really the same concern, is that from our point of view, or the point of view of us and the local government people that put together our request, is that our budget, as you can see in this infrastructure thing, we've got $55 million now outstanding for infrastructure. All the new money that came into our infrastructure funds in 99 and most of it in 97 came from the sale of lottery bonds. Essentially, if we could count on something like the $40 million that the debt service will cost each biennium for new money in the infrastructure funds, or even, you know, maybe somewhat less than that, I think that would certainly be satisfactory from our department's point of view. The reason to sell these bonds is because of skepticism, I think, on the part of the governor that we wouldn't use the remaining capacity here, and that we'd end up being in a position where it would be difficult to finance new money into the infrastructure funds. The other, I guess I'd say, rationale there is that our infrastructure funds, as well as most of the other things that the lottery bond has been used for, creates permanent assets for the state in the sense of that it has loans that revolve back and create an asset that lives indefinitely to the extent that those funds are loaned. Plus, it also creates long-lived, infrastructure assets at the local government level, which don't last forever, but last for many decades, much longer than the repayment periods of bonds. But that's what's outstanding, just in case you had a curiosity about where that went.
Yes,
we just passed a bill for the House that expands the definition of the municipality into adding special districts that would be eligible for your infrastructure revolving loan. How is that going to affect that fund if you add all the special districts into the mix?
Mr. Chair, Representative Verger, obviously expanding the eligibility would make the competition for grant funds, to the extent they're doing projects that would be eligible for grant funds, would make that competition a little stiffer. In terms of loan funds or the ability to do bond bank revenues, that wouldn't really affect our capability to serve our existing customers.
Follow up,
Follow up.
So what you're saying actually is that even though I know that the city's agreed to this expansion of special districts, were you also involved in that discussion at OEDD?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, if I'm thinking of the right bill, I think it essentially deals with the community facilities aspect of financing. I'm trying to look for Doris.
Doris Penwell from Economic and Community Development Department. The bill was sponsored by the special districts, the members of the Community Development Forum, the cities, the counties, the special districts, and the state all agreed that the bill was appropriate given the situation that municipality was defined earlier, which also including many of the major special districts, including ports. And they were already a part of the mix. When we added in all of the municipalities, it allowed a few special districts that probably have some good projects that ought to be eligible to be part of the mix. And therefore, we thought that the impact overall would not be too great, but it would be fair in terms of the needs of the communities. So we agreed it was not much of an impact.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you.
Please proceed. Mr. Chair, moving along to page 28, this is just, again, in case there were questions about the bonds that were issued. I know some of the legislators will remember last time that there were $112 million worth of bonds authorized, but it was capped at $70 million, about the amount that could be actually issued. This shows you what the difference is, you know, what actually occurred in terms of what was issued last biennium.
The community incentive fund only came out at $5 million when $25 had been authorized.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
That my recollection is the 70 was the maximum that we felt like that we could actually go to market with based upon all of the blend of various kinds of things that we were looking at in the marketplace and the lottery and the initiatives that we might have been voting on at the time. Is that
Chairman?
Mr. Chair, my understanding was that there was an interest in capping the debt service. You know, that was going to result as a consequence of issuing the bonds,
okay.
And therefore the reason why it was capped at $70
million. Okay.
Mr. Chair, there was also some understanding that the Columbia River Channel deepening was unlikely to occur in
right.
this biennium, and that the bonding would probably not occur.
The